Folks, welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show, and happy Thanksgiving to those of you who are here in the U.S., though I suppose any of you can be thankful, right? And I know Canadians, you celebrated Thanksgiving not too long ago. And of course, if you're listening, probably most of our radio listeners are listening on Thanksgiving weekend. So we're including you all. Hopefully you had a happy Thanksgiving day. First off, for our inbox later on, what if it is difficult for you to spend time around your siblings during the holidays because you don't agree with their life decisions and kind of how those are playing out? Well, one of our counselors, Angel Perez, is going to weigh in on that. And then for our culture segment, Michael Johnson is a friend of ours here, and he has a new book called Date Like You Know What You're Doing. That is pretty self-explanatory. So he is going to be here today for part one of a great discussion with him about the content of this book, what he has learned throughout his life, and just great practical principles to put into place if you are a dater or wannabe dater. So, okay, well, here we are for our roundtable. And because it is Thanksgiving, we thought we would just have a fun chat around the theme of favorite Thanksgiving traditions. So, some people are very passionate about their Thanksgiving traditions. Some people hold on to them quite tightly. Some people don't maybe even have traditions, or they're just like, whatever. So we're going to find out today from the group around the table some of their traditions, and maybe we can even start some new ones. So welcome to Diane, Bree, and John.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for being here.
Hey. Okay, so first of all, let's just put it out there. Are you into Thanksgiving? Where does it rank in your holidays throughout the year? Is it one of your favorites or not? How do you feel about it? John, you can go ahead.
It's probably top three for me. I really enjoy it.
Okay, well, what are you putting against Arbor Day or what? What are we going to talk?
Probably against Christmas and what else? Oh, Labor Day weekend. Or 4th of July, depending on which year it is. But no, I love Thanksgiving because it's just a great time to be together with family. And growing up in the South, it was a full-on feast. I mean, you would literally look at the food and you could gain weight just because the food was so much there. And it was wonderful to be together with family. And I just, I'm a huge fan of Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, it's probably like a an identity crutch for Southerners. Like,
probably.
If they don't find their identity in Christ, it's in their Thanksgiving meal and how well they put it together. So,
how
many there are just traps everywhere, people.
Yeah, I fried everything.
Okay, well, that's a good point. Bree, how about you?
Thanksgiving is actually my favorite holiday.
Nice.
And it's primarily because the only focus is food and family, and there's no pressure for gifts or any other part of it. It's literally just a focus on food and family. And I love that.
Being thankful.
Yeah. Well, I guess that too.
I'm just adding it in. So there you go. Diane?
I am always ready for a party. So to rank would be really hard because I think Monday is exciting. So
That's
a good way to live.
Yeah, it's awesome. But it's always around food. So I think, and family, which is always amazing. And how many people I can drag in that don't have any place to go.
Yeah, that's great. I do love Thanksgiving as well. In fact, I would say it's my second favorite holiday after Easter, which is my favorite. And of course, there's all kinds of reasons for that. Some of them spiritual. And not Jesus juking, like really spiritual. But then also spring and just so many other, you know, because spring is before summer. We all know that. Okay. Anyway, I love it. But Thanksgiving is great too. Probably for me, even over Christmas. I don't know. That's very hard. I mean, maybe I'd have to put him in a tie. I don't know. Okay. Well, let's talk about Thanksgiving. Anything leading up to Thanksgiving, or are we just talking about the day here? When you think of Thanksgiving, what is happening? What are the absolute must-haves for your day? Or even, you know, I mean, some people take extra time off and whatever. So just talk about what it looks like for you if you're going to have an ideal Thanksgiving.
I now look at it as Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay.
Before I joined in the professional world, it was honestly all about Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
The get together with family, smelling the food there. But now we get a couple days off at my current workplace for that entire weekend. So it's honestly a 4-day weekend. Mm-hmm. So I view it pretty differently compared to when I was a kid for that very reason. So for me now, it's honestly just a time to relax, to make memories with friends, and just to enjoy that whole weekend. Oh, I do have to mention this because I am from the South. That is also college football rivalry weekend.
Okay.
So yeah. Saturday, man, I'm glued to the TV during that weekend.
I felt like I was kind of inched into this because college as well, we had like a little bit of a break. And so it was a longer weekend. And I always felt like that was so exciting. And then you had to come back and face finals. And that was depressing. But at least I felt like Thanksgiving was like, oh, I get a break before all of that final push.
Before the madness.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, I know my Thanksgiving traditions do not include any football. For some reason, I mean, maybe my dad watched it when we were younger, but in the most recent years, it's just been like playing board games. It's a big element of Thanksgiving for us, and cooking all morning and then eating in the afternoon and then eating leftovers, you know, 3 hours after that. And so we don't really do any, at least I've never really done any Black Friday shopping. I do participate in Cyber Monday, but really it's just a relaxing weekend of just hanging out with family and eating and eating and eating.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, for me, because Thanksgiving falls really close to Serafina's birthday, and this year it's actually on her birthday, so we celebrate her and the day. So it was like I ate my turkey dinner and then went to the hospital and had a little turkey of my own. And so it's like a dual celebration. So we always have her birthday celebrated, and that's usually the dessert of some kind is her birthday cake. Yeah. So that always makes it a special day, too.
That's very good. Yeah. That's really good. Kind of, Bree, to your point, I actually did not grow up either with football being watched. And even, you know, I know there are families that go out and do, like, football games, like play football themselves. Yeah. Instead.
Like Friends.
Yeah.
Like on the show Friends.
Yeah. Like, I totally know that that's true. I did that once with a group of friends over Thanksgiving, and I broke two of my knuckles intercepting a pass.
Ouch.
And I'm saying this because I don't even really, like, know football, but I got put on a team, and then I was trying to be a team player and go for it. And a guy's head ran into my hand. And so there went some repair and therapy.
So you couldn't make, like, a hand turkey?
I know. Yeah, exactly.
You couldn't play the violin anymore.
It was pretty bad. Yeah. I know I also, for my tradition, I usually do, whether it's with friends and family or just by myself, I do either some kind of a walk or a hike in the morning. Yeah. I used to both do turkey trots, the 5Ks, and I would rollerblade every Thanksgiving morning. Hello, 1997 called y'all. But anyway, I don't do that anymore because Colorado Springs is like too dangerous
it's
to be rollerblading
freezing on
in.
Thanksgiving.
Well, yeah, that too. And you're either going downhill or uphill around here. So it's like not even fun. So, but those are a couple traditions for me. I will say, and I mentioned this before on the show, the day after Thanksgiving is my breakfast of stuffing or dressing, whatever you call it, wherever you are. I literally will just eat a bowl of that for my breakfast because
that's
my favorite food.
That's funny that you mentioned that because now you're reminding me of another tradition that I have around Thanksgiving. And it's that the day after, we would eat pumpkin pie for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so
because
good.
My dad's philosophy was that we really shouldn't eat it for dessert because then it just sits in our stomach all night. Mm. But if you eat it for breakfast, you can just burn it off throughout the day. And I was like, that's a perfectly good reason for me to eat pumpkin pie every day after Thanksgiving.
And it's a vegetable, so it's totally...
Yeah, it's a squash. You know, it's healthy. Breakfast of champions.
Totally, totally legit. Okay, what about food? What's your must-have food that has to be on the table? Otherwise, it is not Thanksgiving.
For being Italian, there has to be some kind of pasta.
Really?
So, oh, yeah. Whether it's lasagna or it's rigatoni or it's spaghetti, there has to be a pasta side. So I'd rather eat that than, you know, sweet potatoes. But, of course, there are sweet potatoes, too. So it is, it's quite the feast, but it's part of just the whole tradition of something Italian has to be out on the table.
That's
okay,
awesome.
So now we have a logistical issue here, Diane. How do you eat that on your plate without getting that sauce all intermingled with other things?
You know, that's part of the fun.
Okay.
Can you chase it around the plate? And it's you have to strategically place it by something you don't mind slopping over, like the mashed potatoes. You know, mashed potatoes with a little sauce on it. Mmm, that's pretty yummy.
Or do you have to, like, get a sectioned plate?
Oh, that's terrible. No.
Sectioned plate.
Yes. or you just go back in layers, like you eat one thing and then go back get the next thing. And
okay, that's pretty good. What else?
I don't know. I get pretty offended if I don't have any of my favorites on my plate. Oh. So it's not just one favorite thing. We definitely do have a sweet potato casserole. My family is also from the South. We're from Louisiana. And so we would always do dressing, not stuffing. Mm-hmm. We would do sweet potato casserole that has like pecans and marshmallows.
So good.
We made a fruit salad. We always do ham, not turkey, because ham rules all. Hands down, always ham. Mm. And then I'm in charge of like making these really delicious rolls each year. And pie, of course.
That you eat the next day.
I don't follow my dad's, you know, right, I'm just disobedient just in that way. I eat it for dessert and for breakfast. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but those are the only ones I can remember right now. But I would be really sad if I didn't have any of those on my plate.
Okay, that's good.
Kind of like Brie, it's honestly more about what's not going to be on the plate versus what actually is, because you have so much growing up in the Southeast. I think some of my honorable mentions... favorites would have to be, though, pumpkin pie and pecan pie.
Ooh, okay. Pecan pie with some coffee.
Mm, yes.
So good.
Those are hands down some of my favorite desserts. Other ones I would mention would be sometimes macaroni and cheese is a big one. Mm-hmm. Mashed potatoes, collard greens, and turkey and ham both.
Oh, well, okay.
Right. Well, and in case you weren't listening, John and I both said pecan correctly.
Yeah. That is weird.
Instead of the pecan.
It's not
so who
pecan.
Is it that says pecan?
I have some relatives who say
wrong
pecan.
Wrong people.
Yeah. Okay. So, John, do you eat pumpkin pie and pecan pie any other time of the year, or do you just wait for Thanksgiving?
Pumpkin pie, yes, okay. If somebody gives it to me. It's one of my go-tos.
Okay.
And pecan pie in the wintertime.
Okay.
It's a good one to eat in the wintertime, but there's just something special about having both of them at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It really is.
I went to a friend's house for Thanksgiving some years ago now, but not a long time, like let's say less than 10 years ago, and for the first time had macaroni and cheese at a Thanksgiving, so clearly Southern. I almost freaked out because I'm like, what is this nonsense about this macaroni and cheese? Because my experience growing up in California, macaroni and cheese is what kids made like when you came home from school and you had a box of Kraft and you just put it together.
But this is homemade.
I know. And now I'm like, now this is like a Thanksgiving side. What are we even talking about here? So I was introduced to many new things, but never yet the collard greens. I don't even know what those are. I'm going to be honest.
They're so good. They're especially good if they have bacon in them and lots of salt.
Sure.
Well, you can't go wrong with bacon and salt. So,
ever.
<Exactly. laughs>
And a big blob of lard get it all together. That's pretty good.
It is heaven on earth to eat that stuff.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would say for me, obviously, the stuffing / dressing, because I love it. And it doesn't even have to be. I've had amazing homemade versions, but I'm not super picky on it. And I know some people are like, it better be cornbread or better not. And I don't necessarily care either way on that. I would probably say the other version just because that's more traditional for me, but it's all good. The other thing my mom used to make, which I'm going to be honest, I don't make too often because I'm not even sure it's that good, but it's just so traditional for us, was this frozen cranberry salad that she would make in a 9x13 pan, freeze it, and it's some weird Midwestern amalgam of cream cheese and pineapple chunks and random cranberries and things in it. And then you stir it all up. So it's like a Jell-O salad, but frozen or something and opaque.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not that. It was a very frightening descriptor of it. It actually doesn't taste terrible, but you just had it on a little plate next to your plate. And so I just very much.
So I couldn't touch your mashed potatoes.
Yeah, definitely.
Like the spaghetti can.
Yeah.
Definitely could not go about making that. So, okay, well, let's talk about like actual Thanksgiving. Oh, my goodness. I just had another thought about Thanksgiving traditions. My sister, who used to teach preschool for years and years growing up, would all make us like make little pilgrim hats and whatever. And sometimes we would wear those. Yeah. Like some people would be the Native Americans and some people would be the pilgrims and we'd have little like corresponding. And then we all came together and got along because that's what the original settlers did.
Wow. You know,
with
yes.
Maybe I'll try that with my kids.
I'm not quite sure the historic accuracy of that account that we would do. But anyway.
That is fun though.
that was just a little tradition. And then we would often read something related to Thanksgiving or whatever. My dad was big into that. But let's talk about things this year, because we're finishing out this year, y'all. Can you even believe 2023? No. Where did it go? I remember being at a conference in March, and I feel like that was about 2.5 weeks ago. So I don't know what's going on.
Wasn't it?
I'm sure. Yeah. But talking about things as you look back on this year specifically, what are you thankful for?
I'm really thankful that in my career, I hit my 5-year anniversary in my job.
Yay. Nice.
And super grateful for that. There were a number of times early on in my career where I was kind of struggling to keep up with the pace a little bit, but my bosses were very patient with me and just gave me plenty of chances to keep working and keep getting better. But I'm very thankful that I got to my 5-year anniversary earlier this year, and also very thankful that Boundless hit its 25th anniversary.
Yeah, for sure.
Very, very thankful.
Pretty great.
It sounds so silly because it's always so stereotypical, but I'm very thankful for my family, and I'm thankful for this job. It has been an incredible blessing to be able to work here with Boundless, and I'm also grateful that this year I get to do something a little bit different for Thanksgiving. I get to have Thanksgiving with my in-laws, which I haven't been able to do for a couple of years. So I'm really excited for that, and I'm thankful that I get to spend time with them.
That is cool. Well, your littlest, you barely even had last Thanksgiving.
Infant
yeah.
time. So this is like his real first Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That's cool. Although he was covered in mashed potatoes last year. So
yeah.
And will be for quite some time.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the same thing with family and just the health. We know there were some health issues, and the fact that everyone's healthy this year and that we are still able to celebrate Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's just amazing to me that we still have a country where it's actually a holiday that we're celebrating. It hasn't been stripped away.
Yeah.
And it's still called Thanksgiving, where so many other things have become holidays, not even holy days, but holidays. So the fact that we call it Thanksgiving. I have a little bit of a pet peeve about the word friendgiving, because you've pulled out the word thanks.
Oh,
and it's like friendsgiving what? You know, who cares?
But friendsgiving thanks.
Yeah, but it's not that. You know, they don't say that. So it's important to not to strip down the holidays to something that becomes so generic, but that we still call it Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool. I think for me, I have, we're taping this a smidge before Thanksgiving. So I have an upcoming trip with my brother that I'm really looking forward to. And I haven't spent much time with him recently. And so he and my niece and a friend and I are going to go on vacation. And so I'm looking forward to that and just spending time kind of hanging with him and catching up as adults. Though, let's be honest, he persecuted me all as a kid. So there's going to be some wounds that are uncovered probably. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, I mean, I have high hopes, but I'm not sure that this is how it's going to go down. Yeah. And then also our big milestones, I think, are really cool for me. And just doing, I actually did a couple really great Bible studies this year that I thought for me are really, in fact, I want to spend the last couple years of this year going back and reflecting on those and the things specifically that God taught me through those, because, you know, it's just always neat to grow and to learn something new. So that's exciting. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Well, what would be your recommendation to folks listening who, one, either maybe they're like, I want to put some tradition into my Thanksgiving. How can I get started on this? And maybe I think a lot of people can be intimidated because they're like, I'm not a good cook. I don't know how to make rolls, Brie. I don't even know what you're talking about. Or maybe
what's a collard green? I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Or maybe they're just a little discouraged because maybe they can't go home to family this year, or just something just feels blah about it. What would you guys say on those fronts?
Well, I would say that it's a really fun idea if you can find something that brings you joy and invite other people into it. So my thought was like how John likes to climb 14ers. And I was like, what if he did that on Thanksgiving and like invited people along with him and like packed a picnic or something? I mean, I know that sounds silly.
And he could eat pecan pie.
Yeah, that's right. Pecan pie on a 14er. Mm-hmm. But I just think like if you find something that brings you a lot of joy that you can ask somebody to come alongside of you in that in a friends Thanksgiving kind of way. I think that could be a really fun tradition. And also, I would encourage you, or I guess discourage you, from thinking that Thanksgiving has to be specific foods. And the only reason I say that is because in previous years, I've been challenged with that because the family that I spend most of my Thanksgivings with, my nephew is allergic to like everything. And so we have had to change our Thanksgiving foods. And I realized that it's actually not about the food. It's about the people that you're with. And so, yeah, you can make a pot roast. You can make some ribs or you can go buy a pizza and it can be Thanksgiving. Like it doesn't have to be something specific. But I think if you're coming to the table with people that you love, with a heart of thankfulness, I think that's the point of it all.
Yeah. I think I would agree with that because I think sometimes you can't afford. You see how much a turkey cost or how much, and it's then the pressure is, oh, if it's not this, then it's not right. And what are we going to do? And there's no tradition, and we have to have tradition. And it's like, hey, enchiladas are not that expensive to make.
That's
and
right.
It's like, get some ragu in a jar. I said that out loud. And boil
for your
some
Thanksgiving
pasta.
Side,
yes,
a la Italian.
That's it. And I think it's important that, it again, it's about the people that you have around, even if it's just you and one other person. But the fact that you take time to stop and actually say, thank you, Lord, for what you have done for us, that we can call this day thankful because of you. And what else really is there?
That's right.
Yeah, such great points from both of y'all. Two things immediately come to mind. Something that I love to do is to really go back and maybe learn more about the first Thanksgiving and realize, hey, this holiday actually came from some pretty rough circumstances.
Suffering.
And to realize that these people who came over on the Mayflower, I mean, they paid a heavy, heavy price. And here we are years later, we're benefiting from their faithfulness. And it's really inspiring to me to go back and read that because it reminds me, hey, the decisions I'm making today are impacting future generations that I'm never even going to meet unless Jesus comes back soon, hundreds of years down the road.
Yeah.
And then I would also just encourage people, if you're long distance from your family, I've never gone back home for Thanksgiving, but I always try to make it a point to call my family. And I realize we've got many of listeners who maybe due to unfortunate circumstances, you're not able to be with your family or even talk to them at this time. But if you can, definitely, even if it's just a short phone call, just be willing to check in and say, hey, I'm grateful for you and thankful for the ways you've invested in my life.
Yeah, that's cool. I was just thinking, just this past weekend, I was at a women's retreat for church where I was part of the group that put it together. And before we began, we were thinking, like, in fact, one of the leaders asked me, she said, well, Lisa, you've done a lot of retreats, you know, help us make sure that we're not forgetting anything. And I said, really, the only thing I think we have to remember, because we had the speakers and everything else was in place, is just to make sure that we're looking around and seeing people and making sure that everyone's invited, everyone's included. No one's sitting alone. No one is like, why did I even come on this retreat? Because we want to get to know new people and enfold people and make them feel part of the family. And so I know for me, kind of like John, many years, I'm kind of the one, I'm not often with my family over Thanksgiving. And so it's fun just to see those people who are like, you know, hey, does everyone have plans? Or, you know, sometimes I've been that person and I'll just go up to someone at church and be like, hey, you know, does anyone want to put something together for Thanksgiving? I've had just precious couples at church invite me over for Thanksgiving and, you know, kind of round up all the people who don't have somewhere to go. And that's just so, it's just so affirming and welcoming. And so if you can be that person this year, I would highly recommend that. And so that's just kind of a fun thing to do. I do have to say, because Bree mentioned it about 14ers, shout out to Tom from Maryland, because he actually wrote to John basically saying that he's going to get a flight out here and do a 14er with him. So Tom, we're heading into snow here. So I don't know what's going to happen, but we got to make this happen. And you and John have to chronicle it, I guess, at some point. So, well, you guys, thank you so much for weighing in on this. Oh, it's going to be such a great week. So, in fact, those of you listening, you might even be celebrating right now. Like I said, we're just recording this a little bit early, but happy Thanksgiving, y'all.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Oh,
All right, folks. Well, we have got a two-part culture coming your way beginning this week and, of course, continuing next week with a friend who has reminded me that the last time we had him on the show was episode 99, which I had
I made the top 100.
He did, which I had to think and realize that that was probably around 2010 sometime. So it's not for lack of loving what he does. In fact, he consistently prays for Boundless, which is super encouraging to us. But I am talking about our friend Michael Johnson. So Michael, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And by, welcome back is what I mean. He is a founder of Future Marriage University with his fantastic wife, Julie. He's a writer. He's a speaker. He is really in this space with y'all because helping folks, including young adults, probably primarily all of y'all, move towards marriage really with good intention and good purpose and biblical principles. And so in doing all of that, he is a great friend of us. And I actually had the opportunity, we're going to talk today about his book titled Date Like You Know What You're Doing. It's a date prep guide. And I actually had the privilege of endorsing this book. And so I was telling him beforehand that I actually read The Galley. So I've got like a whole stack of papers sitting here, but tons of highlights and all of that. And I do want to say, Michael, I appreciate because I just had a conversation with my friend, our friend, Gary Thomas the other day. Ugh. Thank you for putting my endorsement above his on the back of the book because that I'm going to use that. That is going to be necessary for me in future conversations with him. So, I mean, it's not like he's written any books. I mean, only about 90 or something. So it's all good. So yeah. we love
and
him.
He did happen to write like my favorite, at least top three favorite books on marriage. Sacred Marriage is, wow. Every young adult should read that well ahead of serious dating.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, speaking of dating, we've got to start this conversation. And again, you guys, this we're going to give you more info about the book at the end, including how you can get the book. But I need you to start out, MJ, with kind of you start even in your introduction, and you've said this to me before. You were a pretty good, you said you didn't date in high school, but then in college, you really upped your game and you were doing some whack stuff that I don't want it to sound prescriptive for men because they're going to be very overwhelmed. But how did you get this kind of game? Because it was kind of amazing.
Well, actually, it was three words that my freshman year at Baylor, after going out, not being able to get a single date in high school, except a friend to go with me to prom. I wound up going to over 30 different girls my freshman year at Baylor. And that's because of the favorable gender ratio. That's really it. which ironically exists in most churches today. So men, more than likely, you're way more than outnumbered. But yeah, we do not recommend that.
Yeah.
That's not the goal.
Well, your reputation must have spread, though, because here, I mean, you actually self-describe as a fun date, but you're talking here about there were convertibles involved. I love that you even had a car phone. I mean, a private plane flight? What in the world? Like, this is outrageous.
Okay, the private plane flight, that was the other way around. I had a friend of mine, great friend, Christy, which I know... This is for those that like, oh, I don't want to be set up. Oh, I don't want to be set up. Well, maybe you do. Okay. Really, you want to be set up by people that know you well and love you best.
Yeah.
And that was my friend, Christy. And she set me up with this girlfriend of hers. And we were going to double date with that girl's friend and her boyfriend, which generally is frowned upon in most cultures to go out on a first date on a double date with a couple that's actually already seriously dating. That's usually a prescription for awkward, but they were really cool, especially when the guy showed up in his Jaguar. Takes us to where in Waco there isn't anything except the airport. And then he pulls up to the airport. And keep in mind, this is pre-9/11. And we just walk right onto the tarmac and he gets into this plane. And so does his girlfriend and me and my date. And he flies us to Austin, Texas for dinner and then back for our sorority dance that we were going to. Turns out he was the driver and pilot for a lawyer in town. And the lawyer said, hey, take your girlfriend out in the town. Of course, yeah, that, I would like to take credit for the private plane, but that was... That was really not me.
Well, that's pretty cool. Okay, what I do like is this is coming from the intro of your book, and you actually talk, you kind of don't pull any punches, and you just lay it out from the get-go, which is so great. In fact, you have a subhead, The Purpose of This Book, which I love. And you state what you call the ultimate goal, and you say, how about this ultimate goal? A life-giving, lifelong marriage that blesses the world as much as it blesses the two of you. If that's a mission you can accept and get excited about, then you want to keep reading. And so you kind of set up the premise for what you're going to go after here as far as giving young adults the tools to make right decisions, to become the right person, to understand what's at play here. And I just think that is super helpful. And I want to jump in kind of from the get-go, because you talk about throughout the book, really, but you home in on it several times, about how friendship is really the best starting point in any relationship. So what, you know, with all the stuff about like, well, you know, but there, when I just saw her, I knew we were meant to be together, and or blind dates, and or clearly if they involve private planes, you need to go after that. But but what would you say? I mean, it just makes it sound so accessible and so easy, but talk about, and then people are like, it's not that easy. So MJ, tell us about the value and really how to establish a relationship based on friendship and then take it to the next level.
Yeah, well, one of the key disciplines you want to develop to be able to grow that friendship, even when right away you're like, oh, I'm totally into this person, is don't try to suppress those feelings. You want to supplant them. You want to constantly be trying to, you have to focus on the facts of the relationship. So first date, you know nothing. You know, you have lots of feelings. You have lots of ideas. Maybe you met them online. So therefore, you think you know everything because you read their whole, you know, dating profile. And of course, we all know, we don't even know how accurate that dating profile is. So you want to develop the discipline of like, okay, well, I feel this way. Why do I feel that way? Okay, well, what are the facts that support that feeling? Actually, I don't have any facts that support that feeling. What facts do I do know? And just continuously, scripture calls it taking your thoughts captive. But that's seriously, if you want to develop that friendship and yet you're like, right away, I'm into them, you've got to learn how to supplant those feelings, to dig them up, analyze them, kind of put them, not ignore them, not pretend like they don't exist. Feelings are always real, but they're not always right. And then focus on the facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because ultimately, and I think you would say this not only in the book, but from your own experience with your wife, I mean, so much of marriage is that walking alongside one another and the companionship, the friendship, the doing life together, the, as you said, in that ultimate goal, serving the Lord, being a forward-facing team to a hurting mm-hmm. world. And that's what you have to get straight before you start getting into all the touchy-feely stuff. I think that is so helpful in that. I do like what you say, too. You give the example of, or several examples in the book, of knowing what to look for in relationships. And you say too often young adults dive headlong into dating or into a relationship, not really knowing what the end goal is or what a good example of a relationship is. You actually have this completely whack illustration in the book that I was like, where is he going with this? That you described some people looking for what a relationship is as painting a lemming while drunk. So I need you to explain what this is and how this applies to looking for maybe that good example of a relationship.
Well, yeah, the idea is that pretty much most of the ideas we have about what a relationship looks like, we get from what we see on television and movies and here in music. That's where we get it. Most of us are not particularly impressed. Most of us are not particularly impressed with the marriages that we see around us overall. And even those that maybe are really healthy and strong and amazing in the church, you know, we're not that close to them, but we see all this media. And so it's kind of like if I decided, hey, I've seen painting happening in movies and television shows I've seen. I remember in Emma, there was painting in that movie. And so I think I can do it because I've seen it on television. And oh, by the way, I don't really have the tools to do it well. Like I don't have a paintbrush exactly, but I do have a hairbrush, and a brush is a brush. So, you know, I don't know what I'm going to paint on, but I heard the Mona Lisa was on a board, so I'm going to get a board. And then yes, and then on top of all that, I don't really have a clear idea of what I'm looking for, but I think I do because I've seen it on television. I don't really have the right tools, and I'm going to be drunk. Mm-hmm. And I say, yeah, not everybody's drinking when they're dating, but everybody, if they're in love, it is a similar effect on the brain, inhibiting clear thinking. And so that, hopefully that analogy, and then yes, the lemming, I forgot that part, that then imagine I'm going to paint something that I don't even really necessarily know what it looks like, but here I go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be abstract art at best.
Sure.
And that is what we see so many times, even in good little Christian kids dating. It's like, what is that? And that's why. And so we need to train ourselves. We need to act like this actually is an endeavor, an adventure, if you will, that you don't want to just set sail without knowing how to operate the ship and not mm-hmm. knowing where you're going.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, you outline so many great practical principles throughout of like what to look for, what not to look for, how to be the person that someone would want to date. I want to start out because one of the when you're talking about, and we're going to circle back to this, the Mr. and Ms. Wrongs mm-hmm. in relationships, but really a non-starter scripturally, you argue, is someone who doesn't share your faith, the unbeliever. And so talk to us about, you know, we shouldn't even go there, but one, how can we discern? So what should a person, you know, because lots of people are going to say they're a Christian. They're going to say, mm-hmm. you know, they maybe grew up in the church, they maybe walked an aisle or prayed a prayer or mm-hmm. whatever. So what would you say are your key tips for discovering that? And then even kind of that level of maturity. So, you know, mm-hmm. whether or not, you know, in fact, I was just in a conversation with a friend about spiritual compatibility, and not in a weird way of like, oh, let's take a bunch of assessments and figure this out, but just making sure you're on the same page in areas that matter. What would you say are some of your key principles for that?
It's dangerous to try to judge the salvation of other people, of mm-hmm. course, but we are called to be discerning. And especially if you're looking for a life partner that you're going to be planning to be with until you die or they die, you want to judge the fruit. We're called to judge the fruit. So, I mean, you could start with the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. You know, honestly, on the patience note, it should have been a real red flag to my, at that time, girlfriend that I would jokingly say, people say, you know, don't pray for patience. Well, they don't have to tell me that. I'm not praying for that. That should have been like, oh, really? You want someone that has the fruit of the Spirit. You want someone that's just demonstrating the spiritual disciplines, that they are in prayer regularly, in the Word regularly, going to church regularly, and not in a legalistic way. But more in a fervent way, mm-hmm. i.e. like that made me excited going to church. It made me excited memorizing scripture. I wanted somebody that was excited about spending time with the Lord in prayer. I'm not talking about, you know, 8 hours a day or something. I'm just talking about like that they pursue it because they feel like they really want it. Maybe even like they're desperate for it. Like I realized eventually about patience that, oh, whether I really want to learn it or not, I actually, my kids wish I would have learned patience a lot sooner. Let me just put it that way. Mm-hmm. So as far as the maturity in general, real simple handles, you want to look for someone who's responsible and someone who's reliable. Mm-hmm. Responsible means they, you know, they can take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like they don't need nobody, like they're a lone ranger, but like, no, they take care of what they need to themselves. Reliable meaning they can take care of others. Yeah. Like you can count on them.
Yeah.
And those things are really easy to see if you're paying attention. They're really not that hard.
Yeah.
What's hard is getting over the fact that, oh my gosh, they're so gorgeous. And the fact that they're never there when they say they're going to be there seems okay because they're so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Probably not after 30 years of marriage. Probably not after 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Also, on the maturity side, self-aware and empathetic. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're talking with somebody, again, as you're trying to focus on the facts and not your feelings, they don't seem to see this about themselves, or this, or this, or this. They're not self-aware. Mm-hmm. And the other side is empathy. Are they able to really pick up on how they are impacting the people around them? Mm-hmm. I know someone very close that I've known for a long time. They're clueless. They are totally clueless of their impact on people around them. And yet they've managed to get several girls interested in them.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are kind of the main handles.
Yeah. No, that's good. I was thinking as you were talking too, just the value of someone who can be a person of their word and commit to something. And a lot of times we think of this in terms of like our grandparents. Like, why were our grandparents just so like they were able to endure hardship and they were able to, they went through wars and they went through a depression and, you know, or our great grandparents. And it really is. I mean, that's a muscle that has to be strengthened. And you can see that now in someone. Of like, do they commit to something and follow through? Are they a loyal person? Do they show up? Do they say what they're saying and do what they're doing? And I think that's so great, too. That kind of goes hand in glove with the other ones you shared. Super important now, there. Okay.
Can I flip to the other side really quick, though, and just say, at the same time, like sometimes I meet with young people that I realize, oh, my goodness. This dude is looking for a girl as mature as my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not going to happen if the girl is 22 mm-hmm. or 32. She's not. So there is a realization, but that's where you want to. That's where I was talking about the spiritual disciplines in terms of like pursued with a fervency or a desperation. Because then you can know, okay, well, really, they're just here right now. But you can see that person is determined to get there, wherever there is. Mm-hmm. And so you're looking for someone with that growth mindset.
Yeah. Well, one chunk of the book that I think is so helpful and so practical, as I was saying before, is you just lay out 10 dumb reasons to date. Okay, so, and I don't know how much of these are born out of personal experience or what, but there is something that you said, there's something that you said in one of them that I thought was just a great thing for you to explore a little bit with us. And you talk about how people are so prone, and I don't know if you were telling on yourself here, I think you were, prone to chasing experiences in dating instead of building a relationship. And mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, like, building a relationship, it sounds great, MJ, but, like, I mean, snooze fest, like, why give us some motivation for actually building a solid relationship? Because I think everyone starts dating for just that exciting wow factor. And there's someone who likes me. And now we're gonna do great things together. And we're going to have fun. And, you know, of course, dating should be fun. But give us why did you make that statement? And what really is the heart behind it?
Because I really, I have nothing to be ashamed of with the girls I dated in terms of treating them physically, except for my wife, who I wound up marrying. But I have a lot to be ashamed of with the fact that, man, I really more or less used them to, you know, to have a good time. Again, in a clean way, like didn't, you know, not laying hands on them, I want to feel good about myself. And I want to impress you so I can feel even better about myself. And that's really, again, I could meet any of those girls that I went out with back in college and they're not going to have that, you know, kind of weird, but it was a using mentality. And so my encouragement is that what you want to do? Is you want to be that person that's like, yeah, well, I'm in it for the feeling. I'm in it for the experience. And honestly, it's one of the reasons why. On the flip side, I mean, we talk about the top 10 dumbest reasons to date, but then we give 10 fresh perspectives on dating later in the book to change your relationship life. And one of those is date to make friends, mm-hmm. because making friends really is fun. Mm-hmm. When you are hanging with somebody, that the more you get to know them, the more you see the things that you align on, the more even like, ooh, well, we don't necessarily align on that. They're a 5-point Calvinist and I only have 3 points. But man, does that inspire some great conversation? You know, that's fun. and focusing on that as opposed to, wow, we broke into the Baylor Stadium and had a midnight, you know, had a moonlit picnic on the 50-yard line. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that's great to tell a story about, but I wish more I would have actually tried to really get to know that girl.
Yeah. There is, just in our last minute or so here, because we're going to pick this conversation up next week because there's so much more we have to cover. We're going to circle back, y'all, to the Mr. and Ms. Wrong, so don't worry about that. But one of the, you brought up these dumb reasons to date. One of them you mention is belonging, like the desire to belong. And I like to turn this back and blame like the church and married people a little bit for this one, because I think there's this assumption in the church that you're not complete until you're married. There's a lot of single young adults and others who are kind of disenfranchised in their own churches, like the misfit toys and whatnot. So speak from your experience, MJ, as a married person, just briefly here before we end today, on Why is that such a false, I mean, almost a lie, really, that your sense of belonging is going to come from being hitched to another person, even if that's the tale that we're being told, even in Christian circles?
Yeah, again, I think it's interesting, totally notable, no marriage in heaven. Mm-hmm. So marriage is just a vehicle. I shouldn't say it's just a vehicle. That's a terrible way to say it. But it is a part. Yes, marriage will complete you. Let me just say that. But not in the sense of, and now I'm done. Not that completion. No, like marriage will complete you in the sense of, whew, we're going to work out this rough area. We're going to kill this sin. And then we're going to work in this area over here. That's what I mean by completion. Like mm-hmm. it's a building work. Mm-hmm. Now, do you need marriage to do that? No. But what's really scary to me when it comes particularly with dating to belong is the fact that most even good Christian believers, they really don't understand the belonging they have in Christ. Mm-hmm. They really don't. Mm-hmm. And then they can't share that belonging with the person that they marry. Instead, they have to keep sucking for their needs to be met from this person instead of, well, ultimately at the end of the day, I'm getting my needs met from Christ. He uses this lady who happens to be my wife of almost 30 years, but really it's him. Mm-hmm. And that's why there is no marriage in heaven, because that's where we get there. And the church is married to Christ, and that's really where our completion is found.
Yeah, so true. Well, we are going to plan to come back to this conversation next week. But in the meantime, I want to make you aware of the fact that MJ's book, Date Like You Know What You're Doing, is available this week from Boundless for a gift of any amount. So you just go to boundless.org, you know the drill, search for 825. That's this week's episode. You'll see the book cover there. Go ahead and click on it. You give a gift to Boundless for any amount, like whatever you can afford, okay? This is just your contribution to us to keep Boundless going for the stuff that you already know and love. And then we want to send you MJ's book as our thank you to you, so you can make that happen there. So, all right, MJ, you willing to come back next week?
Absolutely.
On that cross of Calvary, every burden's been defeated, every wretched heart deep. You drown our sin in seas of crimson, every wretched heart redeemed. You drown our sin in seas.
Well, folks, we're finishing out the show. Here we are for our inbox, and we have one of our counselors, Angel Perez. Angel, so good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Fantastic. He's going to give a great bit of insight for today's question, because we just found out that he had good Mexican food for lunch. So he's ready. He's ready to be wise and, you know, just contribute to our well-being. So, all right, Angel, our listener is wondering sometimes, and this is perfect because we are in Thanksgiving weekend right now. And so for all of you who are hanging out with family, here's our listener's question. Sometimes when I see my siblings around the holidays, it can be difficult to be around them because of poor choices they have made. How should I conduct myself when I'm around my siblings, even if I strongly disagree with their decisions?
That's a great question. And what I love about the question is that it highlights personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. How should I conduct myself? So the first thing that I'll say comes from the Word of God, Philippians 1:27. Whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, mm-hmm. right? And based on that premise, I have three things to say, Lisa. Number one, check your heart. Do some prep work, okay? Pray for unity, wisdom, discernment. Be mindful of your own emotions and ask the Holy Spirit to show you the root of this discomfort that you're experiencing. Their poor choices may be conflicting, but this is also something that may be triggering something in you that is worth exploring. Number two, don't let your expectations keep you from cultivating a healthy relationship with them. So that means not holding on to ideals, not holding on to preferred outcomes. And number three, focus on the purpose of the reunion. focus on the main goal, okay? We are in a season of fellowship, of bonding, celebrating, being grateful for the people around us. So, and ultimately, Romans 2:4 tells us something very important. It is the Lord's kindness that leads to repentance, mm-hmm. right? And all of this may be summarized with Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2. Conduct yourselves with all humility, gentleness, and patience. Accept each other with love and make an effort to preserve the unity of the Spirit with the peace that ties you together.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's so helpful because it's a reminder that, I mean, first of all, we don't have to act like we agree with them. You know, we don't have to fake it to make it. We don't have to be, you know, if they're clearly, you know, they're doing behaviors that are, we know, biblically sinful or whatever, you know, it's not like you have to act like you're okay with everything. But I like that point because we're no one's Holy Spirit. I would love to be. I mean, because I feel like I always know what everyone should be doing.
Yeah.
And I would love to just tell them, but I'm not their Holy Spirit. And the Spirit has to prompt us as broken people to move into wholeness.
Right. Yeah. Love does not require affirmation, but it does require a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. So, well, good. I think that's a good word for everyone who wants to get started on a great foot. Maybe you're in a conversation right after this where you might have to apply this. And even those scriptures that Angel shared are so great to get you along that path. So, all right. Well, awesome. Thanks again, Angel.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. Do write to us at editor@boundless.org if there's a question of yours we can answer in the future. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram or Facebook and leave a question there or just say hi. Also, I want to let you know about our Advent devotional that is coming up that's going to take you through the 4 weeks prior to Advent, and it's a great opportunity for you to avail yourself of that. Just go to boundless.org/Advent, and you can get it there. You're just going to sign up for it, and you're going to receive that in your inbox. And so it's just an encouragement and a way to help you focus heading into this Christmas season as well. And so, all right, well, I will plan on seeing you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org from Focus on the Family.
Have you felt it? The calling? The whisper from God that you are meant to help children in out-of-home care? This might be fostering or adopting a child, kinship care, or as a valuable family ally. Focus on the Family has created a website that can help you find your unique purpose at waitnomore.org. No act is too small to a child or fostering family that needs your help. Learn more at waitnomore.org.